Welcome, everybody, to Mormons on Mushrooms. Just a reminder that this is a storytelling podcast where we discuss alternative methods for healing from trauma and seeking a more fulfilling life. A lot of times on the podcast, we discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health top priority. Lastly, the opinions offered by our guests don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the hosts. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy.
I fucking missed you. That's what I want to say.
Yeah, that was great. But the whole time I was like, I just kind of want to chat with Mike.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that was great. That we'll talk. Wait, for Shalisa to join to talk about it, maybe, or we'll just talk about it. It was great. But yeah, really kind of filled my bucket this morning. And Ambrose was dropping some wisdom. David was too.
Yeah, dude, that was cool.
That was cool, right?
That was really cool. Yeah. It's funny, just the different walks of life that everybody has, you know. It's like that West guy and Cassie or whatever her name was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're like talking about how they got active members near them in their home that they got to be quiet about. And I'm just like, man, there is like a wide range of like who's who. Cause you know, I could have told you when David jumped on that dude hasn't been a part of the church for 20 years.
Right. Least, yeah. You can just tell, right.
Yeah. Oh, so what's up?
Oh, there's so much I want to say. Where's Shalisa?
I don't know.
We can talk about stuff that like, yeah.
Yeah. It was interesting. Cause like, you know, Friday she was like, well, let's just go to dinner with the kids. And so my parents came and we just went out to dinner, you know, and, that was perfect for me. Cause I've been trying to, I think I told you, I've been trying to like avoid booze for a little while here.
Mm-hmm.
And
you didn't tell me that. Have you been avoiding it or?
Not really. I've just been more mindful of like, dude, maybe you do drink pretty frequently. Do you know what I mean? Like
we're going through the same thing, man.
Yeah. So I've just been a little bit more like, are you drinking because it's like a necessity? Like you feel like you can only have fun if you have a drink, or are you drinking socially because you know, you're at a thing and people are drinking and you can have a couple of drinks. So I've been trying to really answer that question for myself. You know what I mean? Yeah. And this weekend and this week has been good about that, where I've just been like, oh, if I'm just hanging out, if I'm just at home, if I'm just like chilling, I don't need to have a glass of wine or a beer to wind down. I can go home and just chill out, you know?
Yeah.
If I go to a dinner, I went to dinner last night and I was like, I had two drinks. I was like, oh, totally.
Yeah.
Don't have to, I guess it's not a necessity for me to get fucked up every time I'd have a drink, you know?
It's interesting because I'm similar things coming up with me with the nights I have drank more. I'm getting a lot more hungover now. Maybe I'm getting older or maybe I don't know what it is, but I'm just not feeling great with it.
We don't have those frat boy livers anymore.
No, right? And I don't know. It's just I haven't really enjoyed it. Even some of the nights where I have gotten a little more tipsy, like it just hasn't been quite as enjoyable. I don't know. So I've just been shifting that, and also been coming up for me with just like meditation, and you know, I've been so used to doing like a rapé meditation. And I was like, no, you can just meditate. You don't need anything. Yeah. Just go in, you know, you don't need anything to meditate.
Same. I'm on that same page with you right now. Yeah.
Just trying to like limit the substances, go inward. I don't know. That's what's coming up. Shalisa.
Hi.
Hello. That was pretty rad this morning. No.
Yeah. Yeah. That was good. Is my microphone on? Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, you sound good.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, I just want to make sure it was on and it wasn't my laptop mic that was on.
Sounds like a real mic. It does.
Okay.
Guys, I love you guys.
Same.
I missed you guys.
Same. I've been waiting for this little you know, it's hard to say like three people conversation that, you know, I was going to say, I've been waiting for this little threesome, but I've been waiting for the three of us to be able to chat again. It's been a couple of weeks, so I'm happy about it.
Me like too.
It was fun, Mike. It was fun for me and Shalice to have Peter join us to interview Reed a couple of weeks ago. You know, that was the perfect guest for Peter to be host with, because they just, they connect on those real technical sort of like scientific things, you know. But I would be lying if I said I didn't miss having Mike bring that magic and that Mike energy to it, you know.
It was a magic episode, though. I enjoyed listening back to it as a listener. It was fun to be like, oh, I don't know what's going to be said. And even though, like, when we listen back to our own episodes, sometimes I'm like, I don't remember what I said. And so it comes as a surprise.
Yeah. Wait, do you ever listen to it and think, so like if someone says something, let's say Doug says something, and then you go, oh, I would have this response. And then you actually respond that way.
Isn't that a weird feeling?
I do it all the time. Every time I listen back to our episodes, I think, oh, this is what I would say. And then I say it and I'm like, it's so weird.
I love that. I actually love that feeling, because that happens once in a while. The other thing that happens to me is I spend a lot of time yelling at my phone, like, Doug, get to the point. Stop babbling. And then so I'll say that to, like, out loud, or I'll think it. I'll be like, God, I'm just talking too much. And then I'll say during the podcast I'm listening to, I'll be like, all right, I recognize that I'm just rambling. So my internal, like, timekeeping piece is pretty on point, because whether I'm listening to myself talk or talking, I can recognize, like, all right, it's time for you to fucking give up the mic and make a point here. that's another thing that happens to me frequently.
That's funny.
Mine's more around just like, I realize how much I don't finish my sentences sometimes. I'll like start as a point and then I'll pivot mid sentence and pivot mid that sentence and then pivot.
I do that sometimes too.
Yeah. And it's coming up a lot, even with conversations with my mate. She's like, no, get back. You didn't finish your sentence. So she's calling me out on it. So hopefully that improves my storytelling.
Nice. Nice.
Love that.
Oh, but I've been looking forward to this mostly. It's been, I mean, in the share circle this morning. So I guess we can say, and maybe leave this part in too, just to announce it in a way. We had our first Mighty Networks share circle this morning. Yeah. And it was great, man. That was a great energy. Great people. Mm-hmm. You brought it.
Filled me up.
But it was mentioned in there about just the heavy energy since Lionsgate. I've just been feeling wave after wave, you guys. I don't know. And I sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm through with the waves. And I have a couple of days where I'm just like riding high on the wave. Right. And then it crests right back down. I had even this weekend again, like Friday, had a great, my second therapy session for the week, and had a lot of stuff come up and kind of like, I felt like a big breakthrough. And so Friday night I'm like feeling powerful and self-confident and trusting that I've got this. And then yesterday, towards the end of the day, I just broke down. I'm like, no, I don't got this. And it was like grieving and sobbing. And then there's that part of me that questions whether this is like, oh, are you just going crazy? You know, emotions, we learned growing up that emotions were a sign of being crazy. If you told someone, hey, I have like a daily cry, they'd be like, whoa, are you okay?
Right.
But we've learned that emotions are crazy, and that to contain them, to not show them. And so even as I'm grieving, there's a process of, or like a voice in the back of my head saying, man, you're just going crazy. They're going to lock you up here soon. Yeah. Anyway, that's what it's coming up. So I'm excited to, let's hash this out, you guys.
Yeah. So I just really loved the idea of talking about feeling forced into decisions, coerced decision-making, or feeling like you have to follow a certain path versus your own personal sovereignty and the power that you have within your own choices and listening to your intuition, and how there is a huge shift after leaving Mormonism, because in a way Mormonism is almost easier because you know exactly what you're supposed to do. And then when you leave, you're like, oh, I have to make my own decisions now. And what is good and what is bad and how do I feel about these certain things like psychedelics, and just how to navigate that space and how you guys have navigated that space, and maybe some tips for our listeners who are still in the process of navigating their own decision-making, how we can go about that.
I love that.
I love that. What's well, let's maybe you kick it off, Shalice. What's coming up for you around those types of things?
It really bleeds into every area of our lives. So if you think about even just the rules of the Word of Wisdom, for example, like, well, should I drink coffee now? I mean, I never started. I thought the taste was gross, but it's the little decisions like that about owning your body now. Okay. So I am 100% in control of what I put into my body. Do I want to drink coffee? Do I want to try alcohol? Is that a decision that works for me? Me personally, I still don't drink alcohol or coffee, and that's just my own personal decision for my own body. That may not be somebody else's. And even outside of the physical, making decisions about relationships, for example, like we just had an episode on polyamory. Do I want to explore something that isn't so black and white as it was before? Maybe now I can explore a spectrum of relationships. Maybe now I'll have relationships with men in a friendship capacity that I may have held myself back from when I was Mormon because it didn't feel right according to the rules of Mormonism. There's just so many different topics that we could dive into. And also learning to trust your own intuition. So your own intellectual sovereignty. What should I do today? What should I do for a living even? Can I trust my intuition to lead me down the right path now that I don't have someone telling me what to do, or now that I may feel that prayer isn't an option, which it always is an option, but I know we love tying that to religion. At least I did. So turning to yourself for answers, or even still reaching out to a God if you want to choose to go down that path. But there's just so many facets. So I don't know. You guys pick one and let's just dive in.
I want to pick all of them. Oh, yeah.
I think all of them are good. I like that you said, I like what you're talking about with things like alcohol, coffee, I mean, anything like Word of Wisdom. Well, really any kind of commandment, any doctrinal commandment, you know, there's a tendency. I went through this when I was leaving the church, and, you know, I mostly stayed pretty much a really good member of the church for about a year after like full-blown leaving the church and, you know, coming out of the closet to everyone about my religious beliefs and being like, I just no longer, you know, associate with the church. But then after a year, I started getting into like, well, I want to like prove to probably myself, but in my mind, I was probably trying to prove to the world that I am definitely not Mormon. And so therefore I'm going to rebel against everything that is Mormon,
right?
Which is drink alcohol, coffee, tea, you know, I've smoked cigarettes. I mean, I think of the commandment. I've tried to maybe track it down, you know what I mean? And see like, okay, let me just make sure everyone knows I do not believe in these commandments. Rob a grocery store, you know.
Steal a candy bar from the...
steal a caramello from the Maverick, yeah. You know. I was going to get into some darker shit, but I don't want to get into darker shit because it's not a funny joke and I haven't done any of that stuff. So, but yeah, Shalice, I really like what you're saying about, you know, that individualism and that autonomy over your own self, like what you bring into your body and what, and not just what you bring into your body for purposes of like health or, you know, don't want to have a hangover so I don't get drunk, don't want to feel out of control so I don't do a thing, you know, despite all of that stuff, personal preference. Like if you don't like the taste of coffee, don't fucking drink coffee. That's it. It's not, right. you're not like the Mormons aren't getting a gotcha by saying, I told you shouldn't be drinking. No, you don't like the taste of coffee. Just then don't do it. You know? For me, that's been like a fun pendulum to swing on because I think I like the idea of trying everything, like try something. Oh, be adventurous, be spontaneous, go into, you know, locked doors, go down pathways you've never gone before. You know, I have a little bit of that wanderlust in me, but that doesn't mean I have to, just to prove anything to myself or others. I don't have to do anything I don't want to. And that's the beauty of taking back your own independence, your own self sovereignty, is saying, look, I don't have to do any of these things I used to feel obligated to not do, you know? And I don't know. It's empowering, I think. I think it's because before you came on, Shalice, Mike and I were talking about booze, and we were like, I'm at a point now where I'm sitting here. I don't feel drawn to alcohol as far as like, oh, end of a long day, I'm going to go home and have a glass of wine or have a beer, you know, that type of thing. I can get down into a rhythm where if I'm at a function or an event and people are drinking, I'm happy to join in and let's ride that wave to quote Mike, you know. But if I'm not interested in feeling drunk or being hungover, I don't have to feel some kind of sense of obligation to drink and be drunk and get hungover. You know, it's like, take it or leave it. I don't want. Yeah.
This comes up a lot for me as far as like, how can I phrase this? Just feeling like I don't have power a lot, or my own power, or that I'll lose it. You know, my therapist and I were always going through the fact that I always have this fear that with the podcast and with what we're doing, that I'm going to end up like a hippie in the woods. And then she's like, well, do you want to end up as a hippie in the woods? I'm like, well, maybe for a weekend, but no, I like living in the world. She's like, what are you worried about then? This is what you want, you know? Or I see people go on different paths, you know, and it even happened when I was leaving Mormonism. I wanted to see an example of like a family who had left, who made it work. I'm always searching for it. Has someone done this before? Have they made it work?
I got one for you, by the way. I'll introduce you. You're going to love them.
A family that what? Has left the church?
It left. Yeah.
Yeah. Like my own family or who? Oh, here in LA?
No, another family here in LA that we could all be friends. Anyway.
Oh, let's do it. Yes. but it's funny that I always want that example. And so even when I left the church, I connected with this person. He went to my high school, but was older than me, but somehow we got connected. I noticed that his family had left the church, and I talked to him before I left, kind of like, how's it going for you guys? And it was all going great. Since then, I mean, I think they've been divorced, and now I think he's gotten remarried and kind of gone back to the church maybe. So it's just interesting that I needed this example of like, I just...
Success after.
Yeah. Mormonism. It's like stepping into the dark, but I want to know someone's been there before, but I feel like we're all blazing our own trails, and the trail I'm stepping into is very different from anyone else. And we might have similar things, but it's always going to be new. It's always going to be trailblazing. And when you're going on your like inner hero's journey, it's always going to feel like you're stepping in the dark, and that self-trust comes up a lot. Like, the trust. For me, there's this element of this week was really hard, especially in the beginning when I was thinking about in all aspects of my life right now, I feel like I'm trusting and surrendering more than I ever have. And that's fucking scary. And one morning I was even driving to the chiropractor and it hit me and all this emotion started coming up about trusting. And because I had a good day in therapy the day before and we were just talking about trust and yeah, I can do this. I've got this. The next day I'm driving in and I remembered about to go on my mission and feeling depressed and anxious and horrible, just feeling shitty. And everyone's like, don't worry about it. Like, or don't worry about it. This is just Satan trying to get a hold of you before your mission. Just trust. As soon as you go out there, trust. It's going to get better. And it never fucking got better. It just got worse. And so there's an element of me right now. I'm like, how do I trust? How do I surrender when I've been burned before with that? Like I trusted, I went out there and yeah. And so That's what's coming up.
Okay. I have so much to say to that.
Good.
I'm getting like all these downloads as you're talking. I'm like, ooh, that, oh, that too. Where do I start? The first thing that popped into my head was the church drills it into your brain. Well, if you leave the church, where will you go? Like, there's that famous quote by one of the prophets. I don't know who it was, but he was like, what would you do? And so it makes people afraid to leave and make their own choices. And it makes us fear our own decision-making and our own intuition. And then the second thing that came up was you were talking about you're now surrendering and you're releasing. And I thought, oh my gosh, surrender is a form of control because you're choosing to let go. And how much more of a choice could you get? Like, that's the biggest decision that you could make, is to choose to let go. That's a huge decision. And then the third thing was when you're saying they're telling you on your mission or right before your mission to trust, to trust, to trust, and now you're afraid to trust. It's such a totally different type of trust, because the first one, they're telling you to do something. It's not coming from your own intuition. It's coming from an outside source, someone telling you to believe in something, someone telling you to have faith. And it never felt right to you. Your intuition was saying, no, I don't want to trust that. But now you're following your intuition and you're trusting your gut. And if that comes with a floodgate of emotions, that's perfect, because that's what your body needs. It's coming from you and not somebody else.
Beautiful.
You're so fucking wise, Jaleesa. I love
it. Yeah, that's so good.
I'm just a mirror. That's all.
But it is. It's this self-trust. You know, it comes back to, that's the big difference. I was trusting in my bishop. I was trusting in God. I was trusting in my leaders. I was trusting in the missionary organization was going to be best for my mental health.
Everyone but yourself.
But myself. And now it's the opposite. It's flipped in a way where this is just me leaning into myself and that I've got this, and that feels different, even if it brings up all this emotion, you know.
Another thing that came up for me, Mike, while you're talking, is that, you know, you said you like to do your research, basically, like, oh, have people made it work? That was a phrase you used. Oh, they yeah. Make it work. And you're like, you contacted this dude and it's like, yeah, we're making it work, it's great. And then you said, oh, and then, you know, now he's divorced and he got remarried and he's back in Mormonism. Well, it kind of depends on how we define making it work. Mm-hmm. Because that changes, that shifts and changes. And suddenly, you know, you lose, we've talked frequently about, you know, you lose your identity. If you leave the Mormon church, in a lot of ways, you lose your whole identity. And making it work could look like, continuing on with your loved ones and family and friends that you had when you were in the church, or it could look like something different than that. When you know, people change, and when the Mormon church and society beats into our head that the current structure of the family unit is the definition of making it work, and failure is anything that's not that. And it's like, well, wait a minute here. I was a different person when I got married. I was a different person again when I started having kids. I became a different person when I left the church. I'm a different person now than I was when I left the church. And my definition of making it work has to be fluid and has to change and has to be different, because I'm following my own intuition rather than someone else's you know, commandments or someone else's interpretation of commandments. One of the things that you always say, Mike, is you say, I was talking with my person. Sometimes you say mate, sometimes you say person, you know?
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking about you the other day while I was meditating. And I was like, I wonder if it would be valuable for Mike to hear me say that there's something a little off about that, because you are your person. You're the only, you are the only person that you have dominion over, that you have to care for, that you have to be there for. Now that shines outward, and we make connections and we have our little tribes and families and loved ones, but you are your person and you're making it work. You know, the definition of making it work for Frodo might have been to stay in the Shire, be happy, go to the fireworks, get up, work, till his garden, and get into mischief with his friends. That's the definition of making it work for Frodo. But another definition of making it work was going out into the big scary world and being faced with self-doubt and danger and hate and love and new connections and saving the goddamn world. But Frodo was the only one who could do that. And he, because Frodo was his only person. And yeah, Mike, you got a whole slew of Gandalfs and Aragorns and Gimlis and Samwise. I mean, you got a Samwise in me that are going to help you bear that burden, but the burden is yours to bear, because you are your person, and that's it. And sure, man, I'll drag you up the mountain a little bit if you start feeling like you're not willing to go. But I can't throw the ring into the fires of Mount Doom. Only you can do that, man.
Doug, it's speaking to my heart right now. You know that, right?
I yeah. love that you chose that reference.
I chose that reference very specifically. Yeah.
There's this element of when you say that, that's it's what's a lot that's been coming up is the whole being my own person, you know? And I think there's a beauty in, you know, Doug, we talk about this a lot, how, you know, getting married at 20, 22, you're babies, you know, and we talk about how lucky we were in that, or synchronistic, whatever you want to call it. But like, we've had fantastic mates who have gone on adventures with us and shifted and morphed with us. Yeah. Over these last 20 years, you just celebrated 19 years, right? Or today.
19 years. Oh my gosh.
19 years. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
And it's been, I mean, I couldn't have picked a better travel companion during these last, you know, 20 years than my mate. And it just so happened that in 22, when I didn't even know what was good for myself, we found each other. But then there's also that element of, just like I didn't know how to not be Mormon anymore when I left the church, as we are going on more of an individuation path. I mean, my mate and I are still together. We're not getting divorced, but I'm just saying we're both going on our individual, we're leaning more into ourselves.
Yeah.
And there's that codependency of, I don't know who I am sometimes if it's not, I guess I can say her name. She's been on before, Mike Audrey, right? I'm not Mike. It's that combination, right? Yeah. And it goes into that self-trust. But I love that phrase that I am my person. And how much do I project that out in when I'm talking about trusting? I'm putting that trust onto other people, when really it's trusting myself and that I've got this. And the thing is like, you said that you echoed it, and the same thing my therapist said was, because she asked me, what do you want? What do you want with all this? And I talked about freedom with the podcast and building a community and meeting cool people and experiencing life more, right? And she just laughs and she's like, not only do you say you've got this, you're doing it. You have all the evidence you need. This is happening. You're doing it. You've got this, you know? Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I fucking love it. Right. Yeah.
That should be one of our t-shirts. Hey, Exmos, you got this.
Everything's fine. You got this. Whew.
Damn.
That's big stuff. I mean, I got more stuff on this. I've been thinking about this topic like incessantly to the point where Friday night laying in bed, I was just like, my brain was just churning. You know how once in a while it just, you jump from topic to topic. It's like one of those old timey radio dials, a little static. And then, you know, Elvis Presley on this station, a little static, Johnny Cash on this station, a little static, you know, Diana Ross and the Supremes on this station. Like that's what my brain was doing the other night laying in bed. And so I just was told my wife, I was like, I gotta dump some of this out on you. Is that okay? Can I just
some of this stuff? I love how you just described that, by the way. It's, yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, yeah, please. And so I unloaded onto her and it was really cathartic and healthy and all that kind of stuff. And she's a great listener because, you know, the cool thing that she does is that she stays real quiet and kind of dozes off, but that's all I need is that there's someone that's kind of listening to me say out loud things that I'm like, just can't get through, you know? And at the end she's like, well, yeah, that's a lot. How are you feeling? And I'm like, I'm feeling better. You know, thank you. I just need to say those things out loud. And so the next morning I did a active imagination exercise and I started going into, God, you know, sometimes you go in places where you're like, oh, this isn't where I wanted to go. And I started thinking that I was, you know, in Galilee listening to Jesus speak on the shores of the sea, you know? And I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't care about this. But then it was, you know, it gets to that point of judge not lest ye be judged, for by the same judgment ye judge, so shall ye be judged, type of thing. Right. I probably butchered that, but that's roughly kind of what he says. Right. And so my whole life, I thought that that was like, okay, like a scale. Like I thought about it like, oh, if I judge other people too severely, then the same weight of measurement of judgment will be meted out against me in you know, at the time of the great judgment or whatever. But man, in that state, I started going down a way different path where I was like, okay, judge not lest ye be judged. When I judge someone, I feel kind of icky inside. You know what I mean? Like I start feeling like a little bit of shame. I start doing that thing about, oh, I hope my phone isn't on because maybe they can hear me saying it out loud, and, you know, because maybe I accidentally butt dialed them. I start feeling like maybe that person knows the thing I thought about them or said about them or whatever. And it's a crappy feeling, you know, just like it's a crappy feeling to be judged. You know, when you hear that someone said something negative about you, or when someone tells you something you don't want to hear, you feel exposed and vulnerable and you feel this lack of self-confidence. But what I started going down the path of was, if everyone is a mirror, if everyone's just a reflection of me, then I am simultaneously judging outward and judging inward. And therefore I'm having the experience of the shame and the icky feeling of judging someone else, but that someone is me. And so I'm also having the exact same feelings of being judged, of being like, oh man, I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm full of shit. Maybe that person's right. Maybe that person has a point. Oh, why doesn't anybody like me? Why would somebody say such a thing about me or think such a thing about me? And it's all me doing it to myself. And so I'm getting down again. Once again, I'm on this recording, I'm saying I'm getting down with the Buddhist quality of Jesus. You know, I think that Jesus was probably a great master. Like he probably is misinterpreted and has been weaponized and has been used for people to gain power, land, and money. But I think that Jesus was probably pretty connected to the inner workings of existence, of what it means to truly be enlightened. And it's like, regardless of judging other people or judging, you know, the church or judging anybody, most of that is just coming back on myself. It's just me being very insecure and self-effacing and having confidence issues. And it's me judging myself.
And it gives a whole new meaning to judge not lest you be judged.
Yeah. Cause it says it right there in the thing, right? It's like, judge not or else you're going to feel judged. Like, you know?
So, interesting. And it's bringing up some, like, cause I feel like that happened to me recently. And I do feel like a shame, but maybe I'm judging my inner child or I'm judging a part of my shadow. And so, yeah, the shadow gets hurt and feels judged. And because I am judging him through another mirror, but it's almost like I'm looking in that mirror and seeing that part of myself that I'm like, oh yeah, I don't like you.
I'm just thinking about the word judge and where does that actually come from? And what is judgment? I think it's really tied to fear because we judge things. Let's just say from like a survival standpoint, we're constantly judging. Our ego is judging. Is that person going to hurt me? Is that car going to hit me? Can I invite this person into my home? Can I feel safe enough to have sexual relationship with somebody? Because if we don't judge things, then we might put ourselves in a scary situation. And so what is the opposite of judgment, which would be love and acceptance? So maybe if we find ourselves judging other people, instead focus on things that you can love and accept them for. And I think that would put us all in a totally different headspace. And it's just like, it's so deep, especially in the church. Like being in the church, you are judged all of the time. And it's so hard to get away from that. There is no love and acceptance. They say that we love and accept everyone. Well, except for gay people, we can't accept their behaviors. We can't love them for who they are. We're trying to change them or punish their kids or, well, that's not a thing anymore, but it's so hard to come away from a religion that ingrains in you that you have to simultaneously be judged all of the time and also judge other people. Because if someone isn't doing something that the church finds acceptable, we have to push them away. We have to judge them and push them away. And so I think that's a huge thing for all of us to kind of unpack and realize that we just need to fall back into love and acceptance instead of fear and judgment.
Yeah. Well, why not? Dead on.
Yeah. Look at it in terms of even just like when we're leaving the church and then judging the members who are still in, you know?
Yeah.
It's a habit.
It's a habit. And it's like, how can they be so blind? Can't they see what the church is doing? Have they not, why do they put their head in the sand? You know, whatever comes up. But there's also the 25-year-old version of me who's still inside me. Yeah. Who's like, oh, wait, you're calling me stupid. You're calling me naive and that I've got my head in the sand. And that feels judged by that. It feels hurt, you know? It's tricky deal.
It is tricky. And I think Shalice has such a good point of just the solution is love yourself. And suddenly that love will start radiating outward and you know, there's something cool. Someone said that to defeat my enemy, I must first understand my enemy. But once I understand my enemy, I love my enemy.
Mm.
I think that's from the book Ender's Game, but I don't know what exactly.
That's a good book though.
I like it.
Book, yeah.
Yeah. But I just really love that concept of, it's important to be discerning, you know, you don't want to put yourself into a position of being around someone who will submit you to danger, whether it be mind, body, or spirit, you know, you can discern like, oh, this person's not good for me right now. And so I should probably keep my distance. That's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that judgment thing of like, there's something different about that person than how I would approach something, and therefore I have to make a judgment of they're worse, I'm better, you know, type of thing. And I just don't think that's the truth. You know, a good analogy would be, you know, the mask situation in the world right now. It's like, if I'm wearing a mask, I judge people who are not wearing a mask. If I'm not wearing a mask, I judge people who are wearing a mask. I do both of those things because I'm so full of my own shit that I am able to do both of those things.
Same. I've done both too. You know
what I mean? Like, I can do both. And I'm starting to get into this place of like, oh no. I'm doing the thing I'm going to do for me. And that's the only thing I can really concern myself with. And I have to trust that everyone else is doing the thing that they think is the right thing for them. And using masks as an example is an easy one, because I think we see that there's people who have sides about it, you know, but it's about everything. You know, a Mormon, I'm quick on this podcast to be judgmental of Mormons, but Mormons are just doing what they think is best for them, like best for their family, best for their relationship with God, best for their ability to get in touch with the divine, best in their ability to live a good and happy, blissful life, and then on into eternity. And I'm too quick to be like, well, yeah, but what about, you know, gay people or death penalty or just whatever it might be that Mormons and I disagree on. It's like, okay, we disagree, but can we still love each other and communicate and start from a place of understanding? Yeah.
That's where it gets tricky, right? Because you're talking about like, the gay people example. The church is harming gay people, you know?
Yeah.
Like literally harming them, killing them.
Big time.
And so there's an element of it's okay to call them out on that, not just be like, oh, you know, they just don't know better. And I guess what I want to speak to where it gets tricky is talking about approaching members and my former self in a place of non-judgment and love. But at the same time, it's like, if there's energy there, there's anger, I can't shame myself for feeling that anger that, you know?
Right.
And so I think that anger is an indicator. Oh, there's more here. There's more to process or there's something that I need to, you know, it came up on our call this morning on how you can love someone and be angry. We don't think the two can be go together, but I can love members of the church and also be angry for what the church is doing or angry at their approach of like, oh, I love I love the sinner, hate the sin type of thing. But like, no, you're just hating. No, but like be angry, feel them. I don't know. They both can coexist. And that's where it gets tricky. Cause sometimes it feels like they can't, you know?
I agree. And that's speaking to like the discernment, like the church as an the church as an organization is killing, especially teenage gay men. Everyone, but very specifically. And I do have a lot of anger towards that. And I am using some discernment to say, hey, that's something I want to correct and stay away from because it's harmful. It is harmful mind, body, and spirit to people I love and care about. And so there's a difference though by saying that and saying like, this person I know who is Mormon is actively trying to convince, you know, one-on-one sitting down with every individual teenage gay boy they can meet and saying, you are bad and you should take your own life. That's not happening very frequently.
No.
If at all. And so it's just understanding that those systems of control are in place. And there's a reason we call them systems of control, because we've all been in it where it's like, oh, I don't think I have a choice. That's what we were talking about at the beginning here.
Yep.
Is that we don't feel like we have any choice but to obey. Obedience is the highest law of heaven. Obedience is the highest law of heaven, not love, according to the doctrines of the Mormon Church. And it's like, okay, well, that's some pretty deep programming that we talked about. We're 40, you know, Shalisa, I'm excluding you. We're 41 years old. And we're still dealing with some of those obedience systems of control that are rattling around inside of us. So it's okay, I think, to extend a little bit of love and leniency to the individuals who are trapped in that being forced to die on that hill. As an example, the gay thing is just an example, but there's a lot of those examples. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought it around. I was about to do the exact same thing and say, well, I think a lot of the anger comes from the fact that we realize that we have a choice now, and we want to tell everybody, you don't have to do that. You don't have to suffer if you're gay and in the church. You don't have to live a life of celibacy, or you don't have to struggle because of whatever thing they put on you that's weighing on your shoulders. I mean, I see it all the time with friends who are still in the church, like these hardships and the pain and the suffering. And I just want to yell from the rooftop, you don't have to suffer. It's so hard to watch. And so I think that's where a lot of the anger and judgment comes from. It's coming from a place of love, where we want to show them that, you know, you don't have to feel that way. And let me show you how it can be amazing on this side of choice, on this side of autonomy over your own body, on this side of choosing what is best for you and not letting anyone else dictate that in your life.
And in doing that, it goes from a victim mentality into you feel empowered. It's easy, yes, to feel self-trust when you're like, oh, I have a choice.
Yes.
I can choose. And it even hit me the other night, doing a meditation, and I was thinking about choice. It's so, this is so great. This is coming up this week. Thank you guys for solidifying my therapy. But because it was all about choice and how I was, yeah, angry that I felt like I didn't get the choice for so long. Didn't get a choice of career. Didn't get a choice of how I wanted to live the first 30 years of my life for the most part. And then there was this moment where I was thinking about where I'm at right now. And if I hadn't gone on a mission, if I hadn't been born into a Mormon family and, you know, felt sexual shame and everything that's gone with it, I wouldn't be here right now. There wouldn't be a podcast.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be this moment where we're here and connecting with people who have gone through similar shit and come out the other side and feeling empowered. And then there was this moment of, oh, maybe this has been my choice all along. You know, talking about from like maybe a woo-woo perspective, but a soul perspective that, no, maybe it was my choice that I came and incarnated here and went through this. And I've chosen this all along. And now that's reframing my experience to an empowered one, that I wasn't a victim of Mormonism. I chose it.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets kind of tricky, because saying that, I think that a perspective, because even that triggers something in me to say like, I chose Mormonism.
Yeah.
Like a little thing in there, right in like the, I felt it right in the heart actually. But I think that just shows that there's more to grieve. There's more, you know, like, it's really hard to tell anyone, especially victims of abuse or assault or something, that, oh, maybe your soul chose this, so then you could do this. It's like, no, I didn't choose to go through that. You know, I don't know. There's an element of grieving a process. And I think it shows that there's more grief there, more, and that's okay too. And so it's like, is that making sense?
Yeah. I think there's a balance, and everyone has to come to their own conclusions in their own time. So giving people the space to be angry and frustrated and upset about the way that their life has been, while also giving them the space to say, you know what, I am going to be empowered by the direction that my life took, and not saying one or the other, which is another thing that you get in the church all the time. For example, we've talked about if someone loses a child and then that parent is bombarded with, well, you'll see them in heaven, well, this, well, that, and they don't actually give them space to grieve the child. They just want to blanket this band-aid of everything's going to be fine, so you're fine. Just be a good saint and you'll see them in the afterlife. I think we just need to give everyone the space to either grieve, feel angry, feel all of their emotions, but then also give them the space to be okay with being done with those victimization thoughts and patterns.
Yeah, I think it, what was I going to say to that? It was some, I think we can easily get into a space of spiritual bypassing. Right. If we're just like, oh wait, no, just forgive everyone, love everyone. You chose all of this. Like, this was your choice. And isn't it great? You're empowered and
which can be harmful.
For it can be harmful, right?
The wrong time of their, in their life.
Yeah. To be like, just as almost like, just make it all better. Put a smile on your face, turn that frown upside down.
Yeah.
don't be angry. Just be loving. And it's a process. And you can't, it's a process you can't bypass. If you try to bypass it, it's just going to bring you right back. And you can't jump to the end of the tunnel.
But knowing there's an option for both.
Yeah, you can't jump to the end of the tunnel. That's well said. I feel this a lot. Like the more things I do to like actively strive towards the more I do to try to strive toward enlightenment, the further away from enlightenment I feel like I get, you know. It's only in those moments when I'm present and I'm listening to myself and I'm not necessarily doing like if I tick the boxes of like, you know, do plant medicine, do meditation, do breath work, do yoga, do active imagination, do some somatic, like as if I'm not like thinking like, oh, do this to get that. And I'm just present. And in a moment, it comes on me in these like really beautiful ways of like in the act of, here I go, like in the act of giving up on that or surrendering that and just letting myself be and being very attuned to just what I'm feeling. That's what I feel closest to, whatever we're saying, enlightenment, the divine, God, the universe, the two of you, people around me. And so it's like a weird fucking paradox or oxymoron where it's like, the more you do, the farther away you get, the less you do, the closer you come. It's just like, I don't know.
It's the surrender. It's the choice of surrender.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Grace comes when you least expect it, not when you're trying to force a sense of grace into your life.
I had a moment where that happened last night, Doug. So fascinating, right? With that, I talked about, I was feeling through some waves last night. And, you know, I did all these different things that I don't, breath work and, just trying to do different things to shift it. Like, oh, I know I'm in the tunnel right now. Let me give myself a push out, doing all these things and it's not working and I'm frustrated. And then I just sat there. I just sat, I didn't do anything. Normally maybe I would have gone for my weed pen or something and like, hey, maybe a little marijuana will like push me through this. And I just sat and all of a sudden it just came when it needed to come, then like the tears came and the grief came but it was kind of when I was just like, I'm just going to sit and be present with what I'm feeling and not try to shift it, almost like you're saying, surrendering to the fact that, oh, this is how I'm feeling right now. And I could feel this way for a while. I could feel this way for a month. I don't know, however long. It's just accepting that this is where I'm at right now. And in that acceptance, that's when it came,
This might be a good time to give some practical tips to people who have never experienced this or never tried the experiment of surrender. So I'll just say a few things that have helped for me and then you guys chime in. One thing that I've learned, it's a form of meditation, but I know the word meditation can be scary. And some people are like, no, I don't want to do that. But that's meditation is really just presence and a little bit of focus while also surrendering, as we talked about. So if you just sit in a quiet place and just focus on your breath, maybe it's deep breaths, maybe you're doing breath work where you hold at the top and then release, whatever feels right to you, you can do that just to calm your body down so it knows that it's not in a stressful situation. And then kind of just see where your mind goes, see if there's any tension in your body, and you can focus in on that tension. If you feel tightness in your stomach, you can focus there and just see what thoughts come up and really sit with that and don't judge it. Just feel what comes up for you. Maybe you see a certain color. Maybe you see shapes, maybe you don't see anything. And any experience that you have is perfect and right for you. It's just all about the experience of focusing in on your body, focusing in on sensations, because we all carry so much emotion that gets trapped in our bodies. And it's just acknowledging those. And then with each breath out, you can imagine that draining out of your legs, out of your toes, into the ground. You can imagine it coming out through your fingertips. You can imagine it going out through the top of your head and into the cosmos and releasing that to the angels or to God or whoever, whatever feels right for you. But one thing, if you're making a choice, that I really like to do, and we may have talked about this on a previous episode, if you put your hand on your heart, so it helps you draw focus to that place in your body when you actually touch a place in your body. Ask yourself yes or no questions. And you can start with questions that you already know the answer to. So if I said, my name is Sheila, automatically I get this weird feeling in my stomach, like that doesn't feel right. And then I could ask something or say a statement like, I live in Utah. That definitely doesn't feel right. But then when I sit with, take a few more breaths and clear that out, and when I'm in a neutral space, I can ask or say the statement, my name is Shalice. And automatically it feels right in my heart space. And it's just kind of peaceful. And you can do the same with any statement, any question that you have. You can say in a statement form and notice the sensations that you feel in your body and how you react to it emotionally and physically, more importantly. And I think that's a really great way to check in with yourself when you're asking these different questions, when you're taking autonomy over your body, or you're deciding to get into a relationship or not, really checking in with yourself instead of going outward, like we're used to doing, going to our bishop or someone else who we think has a power over our decisions or our lives. Really just bringing it into yourself. And you can always call in your angels or your spirit guides. We haven't really talked much about all of those different things, but we can in another episode. But everyone does have spirit guides. Yes, everyone has spirit guides that have chosen to be with you on your journey throughout your entire life, and you can call on them at any point. So that's also a really good time to ask for their help and their guidance as well. But really, it's all filtering through you, so you can feel in control and feel empowered by your own decisions.
Shalice, I love you.
I love you too, Mike.
Yeah, I think that's such beautiful advice. And I was just feeling in my heart when you were talking about that. And like, the yes, and like, damn, that just feels good. And if I were just to add a couple of things that really helped for me, is just setting the container to be like, one, the mantra, I am safe. I am safe.
Yes.
I am safe to feel. I can feel. Mantras like that, that are in the present, that are a statement. It's okay to feel, or I am okay to feel. Whatever feels right to you, that allows you the space to be, and make sure you're in a space where you can, you know, if you have, you know, unless you're kind of doing this at work or something, but like, if you're at home, a space where you can make noise, and if noise comes out, or express, emote, whatever you need to emote. And then just say, if you're feeling a time pressure, you can even set a little alarm like, hey, I'm setting aside 20 minutes. And for these 20 minutes, I am safe and I am okay to feel whatever I need to feel. And there's no, you know, it's just like, this is my time and I can do that. And sometimes I feel like setting that container, even if it's a contained amount of time, allows me, otherwise it's been like 5 minutes. It might've felt like 15. I'm like, well, how much more time do I have? Do I need to check the kids? Do I need to check in? You know, no, just you've set the time, you've set the container, experience it. And that's helped for me.
Before you jump in, Doug, because I really want to hear your things too, I just have to say how synchronistic this is, Mike, that you talked about the I am safe mantra, because I just gave my second article to the Utah Bee, and like the whole thing was talking about dropping into the I am safe in order for the plant medicine ayahuasca to actually take effect on me. I just think that's so interesting that you just talked about that. Because that was like the basis of my whole article. Anyway, continue.
Well, I don't really have much more to add to what the two of you, I think those are good. I mean, my practice is pretty similar to what the two of you are describing. I do want to give a shout out to Mikey Pocker. He released a song called We Are Safe. That's a pretty good one if you want to check that out. Released it, you know, during a pandemic, which I think a lot of people don't believe that statement, you know, when you say we are safe, but it goes deeper than that. And that's a pretty cool thing. I have unashamedly stolen Ram Dass's mantra of I am loving awareness. That for me, I can say it in all sorts of different ways, the way I, depending on which word I accentuate or which word I lean into, it can mean a lot of different things to me, but just taking a moment to, I'll tell a story instead of give like a rundown of what I do, because I feel more comfortable in that space. At work this week, I had a very stressful week, and a thing came up that was like kind of like a King Solomon kind of deal, where I had people in my office that were on both sides of a thing that we should do at where I work. And it was getting heated, and it was like a person was doing a thing that everyone felt, you know, people felt like they should be fired. People felt like there's no way in hell we should fire them. Like it was like a real, like it was an argument type of thing. People are just in my office right here, right here. telling me, you know, what they thought should happen and arguing with one another. And normally I think that I like to be decisive and quick to act and, you know, make a decision, be strong, be bold, go with it. But I instead tried to listen to my intuition and focus on the things that I've been trying to learn from my practice, which is I just asked everyone to give me a few minutes. I was like, okay, I hear everybody. I don't think that this is a thing that we can talk about right now because emotions are high. So just give me a few minutes. So I took a few minutes to remind myself that I am loving awareness, you know, and brought everybody back into my office. And someone made a joke, which I think was perfect. I had my candles lit and I had some Palo Santo that was burning and had a whole thing going. I have my little, shrine set up. And they made the joke about, oh, we having a seance in here? Are we doing meditation? You know, it's just a joke. But that joke was well-timed and perfect because it kind of relaxed everyone. So instead of being at each other's throats, it was a thing of like, oh, ha ha, Doug's in here doing hippie shit. And we're sitting here being serious, you know? And so, you know, they wanted me to take a side. Is it this side or is it the other side? And I asked them if we could find space in the middle, which is just doing nothing. Like, can I give those of you who are mad and want this person fired and want to set policies and want to do all this kind of stuff, can I release you from whatever managerial duty or sense of ownership or accountability that you're feeling, because maybe they're feeling accountable to me to take action. Maybe they're feeling like they're defending the company or they're doing the right thing. can I release them from feeling any obligation to do anything? And then the other side, I was like, can I release you from any sense of obligation of fighting against that or of disagreeing with that, of feeling like you want to judge the people who are, you know, that not only was this person, because they were talking about this person could get fired, and then the whole group of people that have been doing these things the same way as this person could get fired, and then that'll cause strife and stress, and, you know, people will be unhappy and there will be, you know, a mutiny on our hands. And I was like, I feel like if in here, there's six of us in here, I'm like, if the six of us can just agree to do nothing and to drop this from our plate, like something that we don't have to solve, and just let it, and then if we need to revisit it in a week or 2 weeks or a month, we can revisit then. But can things just, let's just see how they play out without our getting involved at all. And there was a little bit of pushback, but what happened was the fighting, that back and forth, and like this person makes a good point, and then the person on the other side makes a good point. They started getting closer and closer to that middle point of do nothing. And they kind of started convincing each other about it. You know, I just sat there and was like, okay, well, I've said my piece. You guys do your thing. And so they decided to do nothing. And this was Tuesday. Then Tuesday went by, and then Wednesday went by, Thursday went by. And I hadn't heard anything about anything that was going on. And so Friday morning I had a little check-in with everybody in my office, and I was kind of like, oh, what about such and such? And the person who was most adamant that another person be fired was like, it's kind of resolved itself. No one said anything. And so he stopped doing this thing, and no one has been going back and forth on it. And it's by the way, it's really hard to tell a story when I don't give any details. I don't give names.
Places, no, it's working out, and it's actually hitting me right where it needs to hit me.
But it really, it filled me up as far as like, oh, that relief of like, oh, that worked. You know, 'cause that's like a big thing of to have someone who's has the job that I have to just be like, ah, let's just not do anything. You know what I mean? That's people don't want to hear that. But, in addition to filling my bucket and making me feel like, oh, good job, Doug, that was a good decision, it also validated for me internally some of these things that we started talking about, Mike, which is trusting yourself, trying to take a moment to center and ground yourself. Shalice, as you were talking about ways to, is this true? Do I really feel this way? Can I take a minute before spouting off my opinion or spouting off my decision or whatever it might be? Can I just take a minute to sit with myself, realize how much I am loving awareness, realize that this is all a game and a dance and a fun little thing anyway, and that I am not some kind of King Solomon or God, and that all I'm going to do is say, here's how I'm going to approach this, and y'all can do what you want, but leave my name out of your mouth when it comes to this stuff. I'm just saying, no, I'm not going to do anything. And it, you know, so far so good. We'll see what happens next week. But that's kind of my, I like stories where I'm putting my practice into my practical life. It's really easy to talk about stuff we talk about when we're all doing drugs in the desert at a festival. It's way different when it's like, okay, real world, we got to play the money game. We got to play the work game. We got to do all that kind of stuff. It's harder to shake loose some of those corporate America things that have been trained into me since I was, you know, doing my MBA a billion years ago type of thing, you know? Anyway, that's all I got to say.
There's something as beautiful though. There's something about, what if we do nothing and see how it resolves, kind of thing. Right. And I feel like it's the paradox of sometimes what we're talking about with this tension within our body is that, it's almost like when you accept the fact that, oh, maybe there's nothing I can do or should do. It's just, I let it be in a way. It's the only time it actually does resolve. Right. But but that's the paradox. And so if you're doing it to resolve that, then you're not really letting it go. It's just kind of like just being okay sometimes with tension and letting it be there and giving it space and time to be there. And sometimes it can be there a while, sometimes not, but it's just allowing that and getting out of our heads that what do we need to do about this? What can I do? You know, because it's easy to get in our heads, even the stuff we're talking about now, like, oh, do I do more breath work? Do I need to not do this? Do I need to, oh no, now I need to be more present. No, I'm not focusing on my breath. I'm not breathing enough, you know, but it's,
Well, also your story illustrated how you allowed both sides to feel their emotions without shutting either one of them down. You just held space for them to feel the way they were feeling and then let things resolve naturally, which is a great lesson. And also the idea that we don't have to make decisions right away. So even if you do the sitting with yourself meditation that I just talked about, maybe you still aren't really sure how you feel because maybe there's some emotions that you need to feel out first and you come back to it in a couple of days, in a week, and then see if anything has shifted and changed. But I like the idea of first, if it's a high emotional situation that you're trying to get an answer about, maybe if someone just broke up with you, maybe that's not the time to sit with yourself and answer yes or no questions. Maybe you need to feel your feelings first and let that pass through you before you make any other decisions.
There's another thing with the loving awareness that hit me as you were saying it, Doug. Because another thing that came up for me this week was the whole surrender thing and like surrendering to the universe in a way. And that fear of, well, what if the universe is really just indifferent and doesn't give a fuck? Or
it
does
really
the universe,
doesn't though.
What if it has my back, you know? And what if it's a loving presence? But then we were talking about not surrendering necessarily to the universe, but surrendering to myself. And when I look inside myself, oh yeah, it's loving awareness. It's a loving presence. I have my back. So in other words, I'm okay to surrender to myself because I'm not indifferent about myself. I love myself. And so therefore I've got myself and it's safe to surrender to me. Right. So
ooh, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's just what came up when you were saying loving awareness. Cause it clicked it like, oh, cause there was that scale of like, is it in, you know, am I really safe or the universe is like, dude, what are you surrendering to here? And there's no, I don't care if you live or die. I don't care what happens to you. You're an ant.
Well, yeah. Maybe there's not to get all quantum here, but maybe the universe is like, yeah, whatever you choose is the one that you did already choose. And then the results, the repercussions, the outcomes are what led you to where you are now. And that's what happened. And that's, you know, we're thinking linearly again, as far as like, oh, this decision led me to here. And then the decision here led me there. But it's like, well, if it's all this like spiral of lights that is constantly spiraling outward from an old woman behind a tent in a carnival that's spinning at a loom, then it's all happened. It's all now. It's all happened. It's all a thing that's happening right now. Sorry, I'm referencing a dream that I had.
Yeah, I know what you're referencing and I love it.
Yeah. But it all is, you know? And so the universe probably doesn't care because the universe is like, well, what do you mean care? It is.
It is.
It all is.
Yeah, we do put so much emphasis and weight on our choices.
Yeah.
Like, well, if I do this, then it's going to change the whole trajectory of my life. But I'm going to share something that blew my mind and it still blows my mind every time I think about it. It gets me in one of those like, whoa, what is reality states of mind? You know, Kimber talks about timelines. I think she briefly mentioned that on our episode with her. And I've heard it in many other places too, where we're constantly jumping timelines and jumping realities. And this is what blows my mind. So if we were to jump onto a new timeline, then all of the decisions before that would align with the choices that we're making And if, okay, how do I explain this? It's so hard to explain because it's so out there.
I think you're kind of doing it though.
You're following?
I'm following a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But if I jump to a new timeline, my backstory is going to be different, but I would never know that because now I'm on the timeline where my backstory is different.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah, totally. So, and they call it something. And I don't remember what it was. Maybe we've already talked about it, where there's this whole group of people that think that this person that died didn't actually die. There's like thousands of people that are on.
Effect. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
And so when you think about choices like that, it's kind of like, it doesn't really matter in the scheme of things. Like just do what feels right in that moment. And maybe everything prior, all of your prior choices will actually be different and changed based on how you're conducting yourself in the present moment. Because if we go back to the whole time as an illusion, then there really is no other choices but now. So don't get caught up on past mistakes, for example, or your backstory. Like, don't get so attached to your backstory because it's probably ever changing and evolving as we live in this present moment. I don't know. It's a mind bender. But I like to go there sometimes when I get too weighed down on, oh, I shouldn't have done that or I should have done that. Doesn't matter. Just do what feels right now.
It's almost like the opposite. Well, maybe not the opposite. It's just like the butterfly effect, right? So like the butterfly effect is that a billion years ago, if a butterfly had changed it, the flapping of its wings by a half a flap and, you know, went up 3 inches higher than, you know, we'd now have, you know, tails or something. It's like everything would be changed. Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, we think about that as this fun little mind game of like, oh, that's how reality can change, is if you go back, then the future is affected. You know, it's the basic tenet of time travel. What you do in the past, like, has a drastic effect on the future. But it's like, oh no, we're not removing that butterfly. But we're not saying, okay, because this butterfly could have changed the fabric of time and reality by flapping a different place and a little bit different speed. Well, we're not removing the butterfly. The butterfly still did flap, and it led to now when we are in that existence. So the butterfly effect is happening all of the time. But who knows what direction this conversation could have gone if Shalice had said a different thing that came to her mind than the thing that she said about the way she does her practice and the way she puts her hand on her heart and stuff like that. We could be having a totally different conversation in some kind of quantum reality. We are having a totally different conversation, and we're talking about, we're talking about like fucking, you know, George Washington doing mushrooms or something like that. Like, we're going into like a totally different place that would also be cool and awesome and fine and everything fine. And you're okay. We're safe. It's all fine. We're every version of our quantum reality. It is and is happening. And the butterfly effect is alive and well, and we're experiencing it right now. That's it.
Also called it the Bernstein Bear effect. Have you guys heard about
that? Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't heard that one.
Well, the Bernstein Bear is just the Mandela effect about the books, the Bernstein Bears. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, remembering the Bernstein Bears growing up, I would spell it as STEIN. You would like Bernstein Bear. That's how I remember it being. And I guess a lot of, you can just Google it. It's actually the Bernstein, like STAIN.
Yeah.
But no one remembers it that way.
Whoa. I remember the E.
Yeah. Same. Right. Yeah. But if you look at any of the books they have online, it's TAIN.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So anyway, they compare that as another time that's like a glitch or a timeline shift or
yeah. How do you explain that? You can't, except for the fact of there's multiple realities. I loved, and you guys will know this, I don't remember the name of the movie, but you will, the one the Marvel movie, and it was like the crap, the bald-headed woman that has the, was it the time,
Doctor Strange?
Yeah. And she was talking about timelines in the movie. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's like a major movie talking about timelines and shifts. And she's like, yeah, well, if we take this from this timeline, it's going to affect all the other timelines. I was just really happy that they brought that in.
In the new Thor series, it's all about, or not Thor, sorry, Loki series. Loki. Yeah, it's all about protecting the sacred timeline.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I haven't jumped into that yet.
Yeah.
So good. And the OA, that's another great example of timeline shifts.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, you're going to love it.
That's on Netflix, right?
Yeah. And it takes a while to get into it, but it's actually like pretty on point. I mean, the dances are a little wild, but the whole thing is just about jumping timelines and what would happen if this one choice was different. You would be on a totally different path. And in some reality, you are on a totally different path. So cool. It's fun.
Some of my favorite Mandela effects. I'm just going to roll them past you real quick.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you guys feel. Jiffy peanut butter.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
No such thing.
What? So
Jif, J-I-F. But in my childhood memory, there is a Jiffy peanut butter.
Yes.
Never existed. Always Jif.
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop with that.
Bernstein
Bears. That gave me goosebumps.
Yeah. Another good one is Bernstein Bears. Another one that I love is Febreze. How do you guys spell Febreze?
I don't know.
F-E-B-R-E-E-Z-E.
One E. It's F-E-B-R-E-Z-E.
Lies.
No, and it's never been. It's never been two E's.
What?
Yep. Trying to think of some other ones. Looney Tunes is a good one.
What's that?
Looney Tunes. In my brain, even now, even though I know this one, in my brain, Looney Tunes is spelled Looney. T-O-O-N-E-S. Looney Tunes, right?
Don't shatter this for me.
It's okay, Looney. What is it? It's Looney T-U-N-E-S.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, I'm going to push back hard on that one, Doug.
Do it. I'm ready. Like, I love it.
What?
Yeah. See if more come up the next time we record and we've shuffled a few more timelines, guys.
Yeah, so yeah. I didn't mean to go down that path. I just, those are a few that I really love.
Oh, by the way, it's 11-11. So.
Oh, that's cool.
11-11. Talking about this.
12-11 for me.
This is an official call to everyone listening. If there's other ones that you know of, please send us.
Send them to us.
Yeah, send them to us and we'll put them on our story or something.
Yeah. And Doug, it's 12-11 when you're at, but you're not in the sacred time zone. Of Pacific time.
That's true. It is 11-11 where I'm at because I'm here with you, the two of you. And so that's, it's 11-11. Yes. Yeah. That doesn't change the fact that I do have to be somewhere at 12:30.
All right. We should get going. Yeah.
There's the duality for you right there.
Yeah. There we go. Well, guys, love this. This is just what I needed.
This was a mind bender. I like conversations like this. We went into all of our hippie shit. We went into some trauma. We went into but then we got into just like some mind bending quantum physics. I love you too. We can go anywhere. I love it.
Let's go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Mormons on Mushrooms podcast. We have so much fun recording it. And if you love it, we would absolutely love it if you could leave a review on wherever you get your podcasts. It would really help our visibility so more people can listen to it and be enlightened and hear our crazy stories. So thanks again for tuning in.